When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much by going to airbnb.co.uk/host.
Mother's instinct. Two mothers, two sons.
One instinct.
You've heard of basic instinct.
It is answers the question, what did your mother think?
The sequel, Mother's Instinct.
Coming summer 2002.
Get off the lawn.
Starring Kate Beckinsale as the mother.
Kate Hudson is the stepmother. Stepmother's instinct.
When you're in the
stink instinct.
When you're in the cinema to go and see Tomb Raider Cradle of Life, you see the trend of her mother's instinct.
Hey, Mom!
Ch-ch,
catch!
How do you know?
Ch-ch, it's instinctive.
Yeah. One of my sort of, what's the other word? Ick. But like pet peeves with people is when I think it ages a young person when they start talking about how old they are.
Mm.
So, you know, like people who are 27 are like, God, I'm just getting so old and this, and I'm very slow. I'm always like, come on, fucking 27, get over it. That being said, do you want to know how I know I'm getting older? Right? Because I really think that statement ages you. It's like when someone says, ask them their age, and they go, how old do you think I am? And it's like, well, now I know you're over 30. I'm saying that. But so I'm a real sort of like, urban man,
right?
I used to be a lot more,
okay.
Right? Like I don't know handy stuff. My grandpa, amazing, like yes. Ex-army, very practical with his hands, builds little stuff around my house. My mum, much better than me. My dad and the whole like let's say the Jewish side of the family, completely useless, right?
Okay.
Just not born, raised in London, never done that thing. But there's this really like interesting dynamic of my work being that like you have to be somewhat handy and practical to do the job, which I've really enjoyed developing that mm-hmm. side of myself. I really don't think of myself as good at all, but you are building and rigging things every single day, and it's like big grown-up Lego with very expensive tools, like fun. And I enjoy that I've become way more practical and handy than I ever thought it was, especially when I started my career. And I got so excited about something that I bought that made me really feel like a sort of handy dad.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't an ad, but if any Workman Tools want to get involved, this is great. So I have all of these, like, you know, you see me when I'm building things, I have all these like little Allen keys and screws.
Yes.
And sometimes I'm using like a 20p coin
yes.
and all of it's sort of mishmashed
yes.
and jumbled.
There's always coins around.
There's always coins because like you flatheads for tripod plates and all sorts, and I love building stuff, and you get better and you become very specialized at what you do. I ended up thinking like, God, why don't I just get a really great screwdriver set. And
yeah.
George, I bought, it's not expensive, but I bought this wonderful
wow.
magnetized screwdriver set with every possible
you.
Screw.
Wow.
You've got Phillips, you've got Allen keys of every size, you've got flatheads, you've got, I think it's Torx, and they all magnet into their little place and they're yeah. detailed and labeled.
Wow, yeah, I mean.
And it just brought me so much joy. George, I've been tightening everything around the flat.
I bet.
The little
yeah.
screws on my sunglasses, iron tight.
But
tables, iron tight. I need to do these chairs because these chairs are getting loose.
I'll say.
Because
we're getting older
so
and heavier.
Yeah.
I will say that I'm very happy for you because, I mean, I do have something like this, but it's not
yeah.
magnetized, so the things do fall out. So
yeah.
great. I will say the design of this case is like an iPod mini.
Yes.
An iPod mini without thing, and it's got a little
yeah, remember
click.
The all-around aluminium
this is, again,
iPod
this is
minis.
Not an, this is not an ad
but
for...
DeWalt, get in touch. Let's get some Pop Kitchen drills.
That is great for you.
And it's just, it's going to go in my man drawer and
yeah.
I've realized, isn't that quite smart?
It's very lovely, well designed.
Not an ad. Smooth.
Not an ad again. We're just talking about screwdrivers today.
And the joy it brought to me when I slid it open for the first time and started screwing things, that made me think, God, I really am changing age. Yes, yeah, so perfect. Oh. So you know exactly what you're reaching for. There's Pentalobe, there's Allen keys of every size.
Quite Bond-like.
It's like an envelope.
It's the size of an envelope.
Thank you, Q.
You could keep that in your breast pocket.
And you just slot the things in, and it's really bringing me joy. And I'm like, wow, things are changing.
If you can take joy in the small things, James, I am happy.
But I'm a lot better than I was when I embarked on a career in media.
And there was just
things everywhere. Because I was a desk media guy.
Oh, right, yeah. Now
I was a typer.
Now you're a field man.
Now I'm out in the field. I'm the man behind the camera, the gun.
Well done.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, just talking about sort of manliness.
Of course.
Have you been following the thing about Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters?
No.
Oh, okay, right. So we reviewed Ghostbusters Frozen Empire in the bonus last week. Go check it out if you haven't listened to that yet. Ernie Hudson is one of the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
He is 78 years old. James, I'm going to show you a picture of him when he turned up to the premiere of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire last week. This man is 78 years old, and I will describe this photo for listeners after I've shown it to James, and we will try and maybe flash it up on screen. Again, James, 78 years old.
Yeah. Wow, he looks brilliant.
He looks fantastic. He's wearing, for the listeners who don't know, Ernie Hudson is wearing a cropped, tight, muscle-fit black T-shirt, and he has got ripped muscles, bulging biceps.
Easily forceps. A 30 grand plus Rolex on the arm.
And he's just...
And he looks phenomenal.
He looks 20 years younger.
20 years younger. Mid-60s.
And, you know...
And good for mid-60s.
He could easily take both of us. He's also 78. I think I could say he would look 60.
God, what is he?
If you said to me he was 60, I'd believe that.
Yeah, totally. He looks brilliant.
He looks fantastic.
His skin looks great.
And
looks sharp as a whistle.
All to him. All props to him, Ernie Hudson, for looking fantastic.
He's got a trainer. You know he's just every day.
It's exercising. More than that. I think it's also that he clearly loves it.
Yeah. Incorporate it into your lifestyle.
I'm not the kind of guy who has to, I don't fawn over the physique of other men and get, I just saw your eyes quickly give me the once up and down. I said the physique. I said the physique of other men, and you were like, yeah. Yeah, shocker.
Comes across.
Yeah, no way. Ernie Hudson, good for you, my friend. And if you're doing that, I hope we're all like that at 78.
Can you imagine? We're just floating.
I've got spaghetti arms. Nothing. Oh, well, speaking of that, so this is episode 122 of Pulp Kitchen. Welcome. Last week, we did four reviews.
Is it 122?
It is 122.
Yeah, I think it is. All right.
It is, yeah, definitely 122. Okay. It goes quickly.
I did already label the project as 122, but I have doubts.
It's 120. Yeah. It's 122.
Keep talking.
Last week, we did four reviews. We had a horror double bill. James reviewed Immaculate, Late Night with the Devil. And we also did a bonus where we reviewed Roadhouse.
It's 122.
Yeah. Thank you, James. And Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So if you haven't listened to those yet, go check it out.
Check it out.
But great to have you join us for another week of Pop Kitchen. We are
talking about Mother's Instinct.
And Monkey Man.
Is there any other instinct?
There's the M films today.
Yeah.
Monkey Man, Mother's Instinct.
Mm. They say there are five senses, like touch, smell, taste, but actually there are 20.
Yes.
Because it's
I learned that on QI.
Yes. There's hunger. There's fear of heights.
Mm.
Like sexual arousal.
Yes.
A mother's instinct.
Is one of them.
Vertigo.
Mm.
Is a sense. The feeling depressed.
A sense of dread.
Dread, yeah.
A sense of
anxiety.
Longing.
Yeah. All these things are actual senses that you can technically put them under the umbrella of touch or feeling sad.
Emotions, really.
The emotions. Is it sense, emotion?
So if you like Anne Hathaway and
Jessica Chastain,
you're in luck. If you like Dev Patel writing, directing, producing his own movie, you're going to like this one too.
Dev Patel, just the cream of the crop of the Skins alumni.
For a while it was Nicholas Hoult, but I think Dev Patel's kind of going to edge it there.
Yeah.
I mean, Kaya Scodelara.
She's in The Gentleman on Netflix, having a good time.
Getting around.
I've never really, nothing against Kaya Scodelara, she's never really jumped out of the screen for me.
Like in The Ring.
She's like, I've never been fuck yeah, man. Kaya just really smashing it. I've always thought she's been fine in things. Mm. Like Clash of the Titans.
And she's that?
Yeah.
And I never watched Crawl.
Could have been Wrath of the Titans.
That movie about the the alligator in the house gets flooded and the alligator's there. And it's called Crawl.
All right.
And half of it's underwater. Quentin Tarantino is his favorite movie of like 2019.
Cool. Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Anyway,
I think he has to put a neat. When someone asks him what's been your favorite film of the year, he can't say what would be considered one of like the best three films of the year. He's got to go.
He's got to go a bit niche
because he shouldn't endorse any good film that's already getting praise.
He liked Dunkirk.
He did like Dunkirk.
And he also said he loved that Robert De Niro movie, The Intern, with Anne Hathaway, which I've never seen, but apparently is better.
I have
than
seen
you
it, but I couldn't remember much In about it. Apart from Robert Downey Jr. is kind of cute in it.
Robert Downey Jr. is it?
Sorry, Robert De Niro.
I was gonna say like whoa.
Robert to something.
Anyway, welcome again. Mm. Episode 122, two movies, two hot recent movies coming in. And then, of course, we'll do your emails and then we'll play some games.
Hey, guys, this is a quick message brought to you in partnership with our friends at Airbnb. So, George, I just got back from a 9-day trip the other day.
Yeah, you do go away a lot.
Sorry, I do know it kind of derails production slightly, but work or otherwise, I do enjoy getting a bit of winter sun. Mm. I do enjoy getting out of the sort of dark, wintry London months.
Yes.
And I will be going away again in a few weeks, but okay. With my family. But, you know, I was actually speaking to my older sister about this, and for the last 2 years, she hosts her flat on Airbnb every time she goes away. Okay. And it got me thinking, like, why don't I do this? It seems like a really easy thing to do. I actually went to go and check what other flats in my area were going for. And I realized my home is actually worth more than I thought. This just feels like a no-brainer.
So if you were to go away now, you could host your flat on Airbnb. And when you come back, you've made a little bit of extra pocket money.
Yeah, to goes towards the next holiday.
Yeah, smart. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, I've never hosted on Airbnb, but I have stayed in an Airbnb several times. And there have been a few times when I'm thinking, the host is the same age as me. Why am I not doing what they're doing?
We should be doing this.
Yeah.
It just feels like something that would really fit into my lifestyle. But you guys could find out how much your home is worth by going to airbnb.co.uk/host.
Mother's instinct. Two mothers, two sons.
One instinct.
You've heard of basic instinct. Get ready.
This answers the question. What did your mother think?
The sequel. Mother's instinct.
Coming summer 2002.
Get off the lawn.
Starring Kate Beckinsale as the mother.
Kate Hudson is the stepmother. Stepmother's instinct. Stink instinct.
When you're in the cinema to go and see Tomb Raider Cradle of Life, you see the trailer of her mother's instinct.
Hey, mom! Catch.
How do you know? It's instinctive.
You've seen the film.
Yeah.
Mother's instinct. Tagline, sometimes it's the only thing you can trust.
Oh.
Sometimes. It's the only thing you can trust.
On the generic element of taglines and movie trailers, I saw a trailer for, when I went to see Monkey Man last night, it was a trailer that began and a very sort of, it was an eagle flying through some forest. And it was like, sometimes I have dreams and I see things. And like, oh, no, it says, sometimes I have visions and I see things. And it's like, dreams? Memories? No, not dreams, not memories. Things that will be. And I'm like, you're doing Paul Atreides. I know this isn't Dune, but that's basically what Paul Atreides says. And then it turns out to be a trailer for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, of all things.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I was like, but you're just doing, that's Paul Atreides.
Classic sketchy vision of the future that changes because you looked at it.
Oh.
Like that Nicolas Cage film.
Knowing?
No, it's not Knowing. It's a film where he can see 60 seconds into the future.
Oh.
But he, and then one time he sees like really far into the future and he's like, here's the thing about the future. Because he goes to Vegas and he plays. Because here's the thing about the future. You looked at it and therefore it changes because you looked at it. I can't remember the name of this film.
Anyway, back to Mother's Instinct.
Mother's Instinct. Written writer-director Benoît Delhomme. Oh, oui. Remake of a 2018 French film based on a novel. We are set in 1960s America. I think probably if you're an actor, the most fun dress-up. To dress up as, you know, the dresses and the suits.
The beehives
and just like the sort of, as an actor, the traditional gender roles, probably very fun, Maybe more if you're a guy.
Wait, what? Because you were like, I'm going to wear a nice suit and drive a nice car.
Yeah. You got Alice and Celine, who are best friends and neighbours, played by Jessica Chastain, who's Alice, and Anne Hathaway, who is Celine. They are suburban mothers living next door in a beautifully idyllic homey environment. Two of their sons are very good friends, and the couples are good friends, and they do that very classic 60s Americana thing where they go and have dinner parties at each other's houses and they hold martinis and smoke cigarettes and dance in each other's arms and collapse and fall. And the 60s.
And it was, what a gay time we're having.
Yeah, all of that. And so the two sons are very, very good friends. They do like, you know, a nice little commute school run together. They alternate days. The mothers are very supportive of each other. You've got that classic thing where Alice, Jessica Chastain's character, is talking to her husband and she's thinking about maybe going back to work, but it's the 1960s. Why do you need to work, honey? I just got promoted to a senior accountant. Maybe they want to have more children, but maybe they don't. It's not the right time. One day when Alice is trimming her rose bushes in her garden. Oh, sorry, I should say the two boys, very good friends, and they have this hole in the fence that they've sort of hollowed out where they basically playfully crawl between the two gardens and play for each other. And the mothers notice that there's this sort of like this sort of secret garden door that they've got, which is nice. And so one day Alice is trimming her rose bushes and she sees the sight of Celine's balcony where her son is balancing on the beam of the balcony trying to tweak a birdhouse. She sees this, is immediately shocked, calls out but doesn't hear him, runs round, bangs on the door, tries to get into the house, but Celine is hoovering, she doesn't hear, runs upstairs to go and catch the boy, but by which time, you know, the horrible tragedy has occurred and the son loses his life.
The son of
Anne Hathaway's character, Celine.
So Anne Hathaway's son dies at Jessica Chastain's house.
No. Jessica Chastain is in her garden
and
sees the neighbouring house.
Sorry.
Yeah, so she runs round to the other house.
Oh, sorry. So Jessica Chastain was trimming the rose bushes.
Yes.
Anne Hathaway's doing the hoovering.
Yes.
I think you might have said that the other way around.
Yes. Okay, fine. Okay. Anne Hathaway's son dies.
Okay.
I'm trying to be sensitive by being like an awful tragedy takes place. Okay. No, son falls and dies. That's what you want. And after the death, there is a real shift in their relationship. After being very good friends, there's this. Obviously, Celine is in complete shock and is completely changed by the entire thing. And there's this horrible sense that, well, Alice feels an enormous amount of guilt and she feels like, oh my God, did I not do the right thing? Should I have called out? Should I have acted differently? Should I have not gone upstairs? Should I have just tried to catch all of these horrible questions of should have, would have, could have done? And there's this horrible sense that Celine maybe blames Alice for the death of her son. She starts to act very strange and starts to, you know, because the families are very close, but now Celine is spending more time with Theo, Jessica Chastain's son, so Alice's son, and she becomes an almost like a proxy mother. And at first they're very welcoming to it because she's got this now empty house with no child, all the toys are still there, and every time she sees Theo, it reminds her of the loss of her son and what's missing. And there starts to become this increasing uneasy energy between them. And there's this whole idea of a mother's instinct that something is wrong. There's even a moment when, you know, Alice is doing something in her garden again and her son is playing at Celine's house and she sees her son on the same balcony that Theo was at and she immediately freaks out. She actually crawls through she crawls under that little pathway and runs and screams like, why would you let my son play in that area? And she gets this idea that actually Celine did that on purpose to see how quickly she would react if her own son was up there and whether or not she reacted fast enough. And there's all these very sort of knotty and complex moments in there. And so the whole film is sort of manic paranoia thriller in a way where you're thinking, is all of this a whipped up hysteria and paranoia, or is there really something nasty at play between these two women? You got good performances from Jessica Chastain and Anne Hathaway. It's very tense and juicy. There are lots of moments, if you really indulge yourself in this film, where you go, ooh, juicy. You know when you hear some really good gossip and you're like, oh, yeah.
Domestic juice.
Good old theory. Is that what you think? Ooh, yeah. Like, I was sort of leaning into it, going, ooh, yeah. So it's so overdramatic. Like, really hammed up. I'd say Act Two, so after the incident of Act One happens, Act Two is immediately operating at this incredibly dramatic frequency, and you're a little bit taken aback by it because the delivery is very breathless. Mm. Do you really think I'm capable of doing such a thing? No. Do you realise this? I'm telling you, there's something wrong. And it's
breathe,
blah, blah, blah.
Anne, breathe.
This is all just very breathy. But very
does that work?
So, because it operates at such a high dramatic frequency, the moments where it really needs to deliver the drama are totally ready because the film is already there. But I'd be lying if I said there were a couple of moments where I giggled out loud because of how dramatic it was and we just went from 0 to 12 in a second. But I was pleasantly surprised by this film. I really was. I thought it was intriguing and interesting. I thought the ending was great and really to my taste. And I really thought it's an unforgettable ending and it's not a sleepy film that just would come and go. I thought I would see this film and probably not think on it again. But I thought the ending was impactful and haunting. There's a wonderful real sense of darkness constantly in the film's subtext and its undertone that I think keeps you going. If it wasn't as dark and the implication of behaviour wasn't as... just slightly uneasy. I think this film will fall by the wayside, but I finished the film and I was like, yes, you went for it. Great ending. Not at all what I thought it was going to be. Impactful, not forgettable. I'm pleasantly surprised by it, but wildly overdramatic.
Okay, I see. So if you like a bit of melodrama and you want to watch someone with, I assume at some point, mascara running down while they hold a cigarette going,
lots of shaky, stressed, I can't believe this is happening to me, intakes of a cigarette.
Spilling a martini. Yeah. My God.
Yeah.
You don't love me anymore. You never did. Yeah, all
but
that
good.
Stuff.
I'm sure like the script and the direction all lends itself to this. Oh my God, it's just this. But it delivers. It delivers and I think it works. Pleasantly surprised.
So from the trailer, one of the husbands, I believe, is played by the guy from Worst Person in the World. Is it that right? Is he the Norwegian actor?
Yes.
Who plays her boyfriend
in
that?
Yes, Toasties and Clock Club. Yeah. Yes, it is.
And who's the other actor?
The other actor is, I can't remember his name, but you will. Hold on. Really great. I think there's only about 5-6 actors in it, if you count the kid. Cast. It is Josh Charles.
Josh Charles.
That guy. He plays the other husband.
Oh, yeah, from The Good Wife, yeah.
Yeah. All great. All great. Good performances. Like, they're up there.
Yeah.
They're really going for it. But, you know, I like Jessica Chastain. I like Anne Hathaway. Great.
Have you seen Mother's Instinct? If you have, let us know your thoughts at hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We'd love to have your email in to get to know that and to get to know your thoughts and to know you.
Yeah. You can really see there's like a fork in the road at the end of a film. And I was like, there was two ways to do this. And I really thought like, well, it's this kind of film you'll get. And it's like, no.
They went for the road less traveled.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. The road more haunting. The road more things that make you go.
Things that make.
And then when you look back and you're like, that was juicy. That was and then that ending I think frames the rest of it as a more complete and successful film in my eyes.
Runtime,
hour 45.
Ah, smashing.
Yeah,
good. That sounds exactly what it needs to be.
Well, it didn't need to be any longer.
I look forward to catching that at some point. That was Mother's Instinct.
Is there any other?
Is there any other kind? What else? You know?
Mother's Instinct.
You've seen Jennifer Lawrence in Mother. Now see Jessica Chastain in Mother's Instinct.
Do you have a mother? Did you ever wonder what her instinct was? Fall 2002.
Two boys, two houses, two mothers.
Critics
you
are
just,
saying.
Also, you just saying Anna Hathaway was trimming her rose bushes in the garden just sounds like the setup to a really dirty joke. I'm like, well,
right, you like this one, right? Anne Hathaway.
And then the vicar came round and she was trimming her rose bushes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So let's do Monkey Man. Dev Patel's what are you laughing?
Monkey Man.
Monkey Man. You've seen Mother's Instinct. Now for the man who's a monkey.
Line up for Monkey Man.
I'm a
monkey man. It's like the Rob Schneider is a carrot in a 24-carat comedy.
I'm a monkey man. What do you want me to do? Planet of the Apes gets a makeover.
I can't eat bananas all day.
And then the sequel, Monkey Men. Then the reboot, Monkey Women. Anyway, Monkey Man, which is the debut film from Dev Patel. Actor Dev Patel, an actor I really like. I've enjoyed him. Whenever I see him and stuff, I'm like, yes, always delivers, always good. Lion, Slumdog, Skins, etc.
He's cool.
He's really cool and he's really interesting. If you ever see an interview with him, he's somebody who's so switched on and engaged. and thinking about acting and filmmaking.
Film.
It's great. Debut film from him, written and directed, produced by Jordan Peele. This film was originally being made for Netflix. It was sort of tagline and billed as John Wick in Mumbai, even though it's not quite accurate.
I really got a John Wick vibe when I saw the trailer.
Yes, and there is actually a line where they refer to John Wick. There's a spoken line that says, oh, this gun, it's like in the John Wick movies. And he's like, no, I want to do this.
Oh, yes, nice.
Yes, it's a little place quite cute. But it was Jordan Peele saw a cut of the movie and acquired it from Netflix via Monkey Paw Productions, which is his production company.
That's a coincidence.
And Monkey Paw has a release deal with Universal. So now it's getting a big theatrical release, which is great.
Oh, great.
And Monkey Man is set in... I don't think it actually states that it's in Mumbai. I think it's just sort of in a giant Indian metropolis city in present day. We follow an anonymous character who goes by the moniker of Bobby, which he comes up with very quickly in one scene because there's a tub of... powdered bleach called Bobby's Powdered Bleach, and he uses that as an alias, but really he is anonymous to us, the audience. Mm-hmm. We first meet who I'm going to call Bobby, played by Dev Patel, in an underground fighting ring where he wears a monkey mask and he fights against other wrestlers who wear masks of different animals, and it's this raucous, sweaty cage match overseen by a fantastically cast and brilliantly slippery Sharlto Copley. District 9, and he's there like, look in this corner, we've got the Monkey Man, and over here we've got the Cobra. And
I bet he had like sweat running down his head, a little bit of grime,
velvet jacket, and it's just like it's great. He's really good in it. It's seedy, it's underworld, and Bobby often is getting money to throw the fight, to lose the fight. He doesn't get paid enough because he's not bleeding, and when he takes the mask off and we get to see him a bit more, he is clearly someone who is determined and has a mission because he is haunted by these visions of something that happened in his past. A very violent event that happened that is motivating him. And it is clear that he is trying to get into the upper echelons of the society of this city, specifically getting to work at a private, it's like a hotel private members club / casino thing called Kings, and he's trying to get inveigle his way in there. He has got these scars on his hands, these horrible sort of burn-like bleached scars, and he says at one point to someone like, look, I've done the jobs that people don't want me to do. I will do anything for you just to get into this place. And so begins his quest, motivated clearly by vengeance for something that happened in his past, to get into this club, to target the upper echelon, specifically the police and the chief of police. And so we follow Bobby on his quest for vengeance. And that's all I need to say about the plot. It is very stylish. It is lots of neon and alleyways dripping in rain and dirt and also posh interiors and slick velvet. There is a bit where someone drives a pimped out tuk-tuk, which is great. And I'm like, this is what I expect to see. And I really had a great time with Monkey Man. Actually, I was really excited. I think it's really great. When I you know, heard about it being made, I like Dev Patel as a talent. We all like Jordan Peele. I want to know where they took this. And I have to say, I was really impressed. So the first thing is, I love it when you see a debut film that just like crackles with debut film energy, that is fighting for its very existence to be there. You know, when we talked about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire last week, it's like that is the example of a film that doesn't know why it exists.
Yeah.
It's just sort of floating around, has no real reason to be alive. Whereas this film, as being a debut film, Dev Patel is fighting on every element to justify why this film is there. And I love that. It's just it's just a really exciting thing to watch. It is very stylish. I never felt the style was ever derivative. I never thought, well, they're trying to do John Wick, they were trying to do that. Like, it is a lot of fast cam, a little bit of shaky cam. A couple of times, a little so fast and so shaky that I was like, this is great, but I don't know what just happened. But right, sure, I guess someone just got stabbed, I guess.
Yeah.
Blood on the camera, swish pan moving, but it really slick style that works the film. And I didn't ever feel like the film was trying to copy another type of film. I felt it was really trying to be its own kind of voice. The fight scenes are well choreographed and nasty. This film was an 18, which if you're going to make a film about underground fighting ring and vengeance, you want it to be an 18.
And
there is cracking skulls, there is blood, there is limbs and fingers and knives and burns. And I think that it also has a really good deadpan sense of humor. There's one or two moments in the fight scenes where I was like cackling. You know, you do kind of like wicked cackle. When you see a really well orchestrated fight scene that ends, someone ends particularly badly, is dispatched in a particular way, you go, oh, God.
It really catches your baseline primal. Yes. Yeah, get him.
You're like, I'm like that. And some of it's like wickedly funny, like darkly funny in that respect. I think Dev Patel is great. His character, like with the whole film itself, but his character is hyper-focused and hyper-serious. But it's just just very compelling to watch, even though he's like lanky and scrawny, but he's also incredibly muscular and a bit like a monkey is. A monkey is incredibly strong, but also agile.
I was going to say, it's interesting to see Dev Patel in like action growing mode into an action role. I would never have thought to cast him, but you know, makes that opportunity for himself.
He just totally owns it. He's got complete command over the film, and I love that. I think that the film kind of falls into a little bit of two halves. The first half is very grounded and gritty, and the second half is more about spirituality and myth and assuming an identity greater than yourself. I think certain parts work better than others. I think probably the first half is just a bit stronger. But that said, I still felt like as a piece, the whole thing worked. Has a great climax at the end. And honestly, in the first hour, I was just like, this is a great movie. I'm like, this is really, really good. I'm really enjoying this. And you know, I just came away thinking, Dev Patel, I can't wait to see what you do next. Nice. It wasn't even one of those debuts where I go, okay, like there's promise there, but it's quite flawed. I was like, no, this is a solid movie, which gives me a solid good time. I mean, there's some people sat behind me who, when before the film began, they were talking amongst themselves and said, oh yeah, I've heard it's like, they say it's like John Wick in Mumbai. And if it's only even like half like that, I'll be happy. And I'm like, well, you will be very happy if that's what you're expecting. I'm like, that guy would have been happy because he got totally delivered.
Yeah.
Fun, punchy, crunchy, knotty. Dev Patel absolutely shining it. I love the fact this film exists. I think it's solid stuff.
A Pulp Kitchen thumbs up.
Yeah, Monkey Man. It's nice. A good time.
Yeah.
If people said to me, oh, what should I go see? I was like, oh, go see Monkey Man.
Go see it on the big screen?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I'd love to know people's thoughts. It's out this week.
Interesting to see Dev Patel develop as a writer, director, producer extraordinaire.
Absolutely.
He keeps delivering.
I'd love to see his next vehicle. Whether it be a pimped out tuk-tuk or not.
I think Mumbai's a cool location for films. It's probably not explored in Western cinema so much, I'm sure.
No.
But like, it's a cool, sprawling, there's neon and crime and nightlife. Like, I think it's something quite cool to explore there.
I also think I'm interested in the fact that Dev Patel has played Indian characters in Indian stories, but for other filmmakers before,
often
white filmmakers. So Danny Boyle was Slumdog Millionaire, or I think it was Garth McKenzie, I think his name is, for Lion. But I really felt like he was like, but I'm going to do that, but this is my version this time, and I want it to be a serious story, but it delivers the goods. I think it's really competent, and I thumbs up, Dev. Can't wait to see what you do next.
Oh, guys, we'd love to hear your thoughts. If you manage to catch Monkey Man in the coming week, send them, as always, in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com, and we will read your reviews out on the show. Monkey Man.
Monkey Man.
He's a man.
He's a man who's a monkey.
He's like the Elephant Man. Do I abuse you?
You've seen the Elephant Man.
No. Audiences gasp at the Monkey Man.
Wait. No. You know, actually, you know what? It should have been, he's played a slum dog. He's played a lion.
Now Dev Patel is
Monkey Man.
He dances across the title screen.
No.
Coming summer 2004.
I'm just trying to be a man, but everyone wants me to be a monkey.
His friend comes in, bananas again. too good.
Yes.
Too good.
Monkey Man. It's out on this Friday. If you're listening to this episode comes out on Wednesday, it's out this Friday. Let us know your thoughts. hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. Monkey Man, done.
George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent into Pop Kitchen every single week? People send us their thoughts, their questions, their concerns, their reviews. Write reviews. Mini reviews. for the show.
Keep it mini.
Yeah, mini. Mini reviews on the films that are out. Those are the emails I like.
Thank you.
As always, you can send them into hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com. Just
like
Bevan did. Oh, Bevan writes into
Bevan.
The show.
Oh, Bevan. Bevan is a place.
Bevan is a miserable now.
We should clarify, before we read Bevan's email. Also, just on Bevan, we went for a drink with
a friend of ours
who works in the industry last week, who also listens to the show.
Yeah. Big up, Rory.
Hey. Big up Rory. Hey, Rory. Who was like, yeah, man, and who's this Bevan guy in Ireland to be listening to?
What's he up to? Who's Bevan?
And we were like, have we never clarified the fact that Bevan is a girl?
Yeah.
So Bevan is a woman. And if that helps people have a mental image in their head.
Bevan writes in and says, hey, boys, how's things? Hope yous are both well. Just writing in because I haven't in a while. I recently watched the film City of God. Mm. I think this is one of the best films to do flashback montages that don't feel sticky and gross like Air.
Have you seen that?
No, I've not, but I know of the film. It looks great.
Do you know why? Sorry.
Yeah.
Just Frederic Morales. Oh, I can't remember his exact name. The co-director, there's two directors on that film. He used to work in advertising and he was even still working in advertising when he shot that movie. So
nice.
It's got a nice kind of glossy commercial look against a very gritty story.
Yeah.
And kind of film photography, good colours.
Oh, cool. I hadn't seen a film like this since I watched it at uni in a crowded lecture hall with crappy blinds over the windows. So it was brilliant to see it on screen in a cinema at last. You know when the sun comes through on the screen?
I hate that.
So annoying.
It also makes me feel very sleepy.
Something about it. It's like when you're driving in a car and there's dappled light. The sun's coming through trees and keeps interrupting your eyes and it sort of sends you off. I have a little question. Have either of you seen Love Hate? That's Love/Hate. It's a program I think you would both really enjoy. Tom Von Lawler stars and he's a cracker. You also get to see a very young Barry Keoghan in it too. I highly recommend you try and catch it because it's really well structured and acted TV show.
I've just looked that up. So that was a show that ran from 2010 to 2014, 15 by the looks of it, and has a host of Irish actors in it, Aidan Gillen and Robert Sheehan. Do you remember Robert Sheehan from Misfits?
Like, he really burst onto the scene with Misfits. I think we talked about this briefly when I reviewed Femme with Stuart Garrett, thank you.
Stuart Jarrett.
It
doesn't matter, but yes. I'm pretty sure, I mean, again,
he was great.
Robert, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Robert Sheehan left Misfits because he didn't want to get typecast. That also, in effect, basically killed the show. But then
he never really seen him in much.
But I'm like, if you maybe just stuck with Misfits for a bit longer, like we would have had a good show.
Yeah. I remember watching the trailer for Mortal Engines, which is that Peter Jackson, CG fest. I remember seeing him starring it and I was like, God, where do I know that guy? Was he from? And I was like, fuck, that's the guy from Misfits.
Anyway, sorry, but I haven't seen this. Bevan, looks quite good.
Bevan goes on to say, anyways, keep smashing the pod out of the park. Realised as yous released EP 121 that I've been listening for 115 episodes.
Wow.
Crazy stuff altogether. The show has gone from strength to strength, and I'm so excited to see what you guys get up to as it continues to grow. All my love always, your friend, Bevan.
Thank you, Bevan.
Bevan.
I wonder what we covered in episode 7 that made Bevan first click on our show.
Yeah, what? Why?
Was that No Time to Die?
No, that was early.
Was that like...
Should I find out?
Yeah, go on.
Entertain the sirens.
All right, guys. This next email is from... Or should I wait for you to answer?
No, you could just go and I'll scroll back infinitely.
This email is from Ryan, who says, hi, James and George. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. I'm a nurse from South Wales, not far from Swansea. And the night before travelling to Australia, were you travelling to New South Wales?
Okay. Episode 7 was the best and worst movie sequels. That got you, Bevan.
That got you in.
Anyway.
And the night before travelling to Australia, I watched Society of the Snow after listening to your review on the coach. Should not have done that before a 24-hour flight. Yeah, no way. Your podcast got me through the stagnant hours not being able to sleep on the plane and then watching movies. And when watching movies got annoying. It's a very long time to be on a flight. Yeah. My first question is, how do planes provide such new releases? Mm. They're not brand new releases, but fairly recent. Well, on that question, I would just say, I think they probably have a deal.
They have deals, and individual films get individual deals, but they pay between studios as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you're with a big studio, they'll have like a flight deal with One World.
I think it also depends which direction you're flying, depending on the territory.
Yes.
Because if you're flying like to America, you're safe like flying back.
And you're not going to get films like Flight with Denzel Washington or United 93.
No.
Or even though it's a Netflix film, you're never going to see Society of the Snow.
No.
There's a sort of certain topics you won't find on planes.
But they've actually, I thought there was a time when you wouldn't be able to watch like 18 rated movies on planes, but you can, and they, yeah. they don't even censor the gore anymore. So if you just look right and you're like, yeah. oh, just someone.
I watched so much of House of the Dragon season one on my iPad on a plane. And I was on an aisle seat, and there's so much sex in that. Yeah. I just feel so awkward. But you have to just be like, yeah, I'm watching Game of Thrones.
It's, yeah, it's
this scene will be over in 45 seconds, and then 3 minutes later,
but it'll scar you for life. Just, yeah. Ryan's next question is, can we name the end of the year awards the Pulpies? Someone, yeah. I swear someone asked that before. James wouldn't get the Office reference, but George would. Oh, I get it. The Pulpies. We could probably do that. Third question, do you guys ever plan on releasing merch? Mm. Now, it's a discussion we have had, and it's something that we will probably think about in the
future.
Bevan
wants laptop stickers, we know that.
Yeah, and a tattoo on her head that says Pulp Kitchen. It's something we're definitely thinking about. Mm. It's all about planning and timing and resources.
You don't want to do it rubbish, but yeah, I'd love a nice little tee, a nice hoodie.
Yeah. So watch this space.
Yeah, it'll come. And you'll just be the first to say, to know.
Ryan says, just wanted to say your guys' podcast is bloody brilliant and has even enhanced my passion for film and changed how I watch and approach them. I love that. Thank you so much, Ryan. Keep up the amazing work. Sorry for the long email. Sirens on our very end. Sirens on every end.
On our very end.
Thanks, Ryan, sent from my iPhone while sat on a tram in Melbourne. Ryan, I hope you have a great time in Australia.
When we eventually take the sirens over the top, we'll be like, and the sirens are on our very end. I like that people keep saying we're changing the way they watch and approach film. I hope
compliment.
They hear our voices on their shoulders as they're watching, just annoying them.
Like what you're in one ear being like, look at the frame rate. And then I'm in the other ear being like, do you know that actor was also in that movie with that director?
This next one is from Jill, who writes in and says, streaming. Hi,
Jill,
guys.
Also, great surname.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't even know how to start to pronounce that, I don't think.
I think you sort of soften all the consonants. You know?
Excuse me, I ordered these consonants to be softened. Could you take this back to the kitchen?
Jill says, hi, guys. I only recently found your podcast on Instagram. I love your reviews and the banter between you two.
I'm a
movie fan and always love to hear new reviews on films I've recently seen. Every year, I try to watch all the movies that are nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. This year, I managed to watch 7 of them. Maestro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Zone of Interest, Missing. Oh, 7 of them. Maestro, Killers of the Flower Moon, yep. Zone of Interest are missing from that list. I absolutely loved Past Lives, and I'm so happy to hear that you loved it too. It was so minimalistic in a way, but emotionally huge and with a lot of great quotes. Now to my question. There are more and more streaming services that offer the big movies right after they were released in cinema. Do you think the cinema culture experience will take a hit in the future and become less relevant because every movie can be watched comfortably at home? I personally love going to the cinema because I can give it my full attention to the film and being distracted by my phone, for example. Especially movies like Dune Part 2, Brackets Changed My Life, absolutely loved it, have been to see it on the big screen. One of my favourite parts, however, are the trailers shown before the movie. All of my friends disagree, and I've yet to find a person that likes the trailers as much as I do. Keep up the good content, and I can't wait for new episodes. Greetings from Luxembourg, Jill.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I've never been to Luxembourg. No. I don't think I've ever met anyone from Luxembourg, so that's always nice. We're spreading across the map.
I think a lot of people like the process of watching trailers before the cinema.
Oh yeah,
I hear that all the time. I was once shushed
for talking during the trailers.
Yeah, you can't. I don't think you could do
that. I think that's out of order. I was with someone as well. Like,
I think I like it less since we started the show, actually, because I'm probably watching the trailers too many times. But before I was actively engaged weekly over a long period of time in films. I do love it.
Also, as discussed, trailers show too much. I watched the trailer for Love Lies Bleeding yesterday, which I'd never seen. So I reviewed that a couple of weeks ago and I hadn't seen the trailer. I just went to a screening of it. And now, because the film's coming out next month, the trailers are out. I watched the trailer and I was like, well, that showed everything.
Yeah.
That really showed everything.
If you go to the cinema like 1 to 2 to 3 times a week, like we currently do, if there's a big film with a long marketing run, you could potentially see the trailer for it like 6+ times before it comes out.
By that point, we'll have burnt the images into your brain.
I'll have stupidly seen it on the internet and go, oh, look, the trailer. That'll be the first time I see it is on YouTube. And then I'll go, why do I bother? I'm going to see this many, many times. But George, just on streaming, and
so
we've talked about this a lot and we sort of have lots of different thoughts, this post-COVID thing, but cinema taking away from the home streaming experience.
Well, I think it's important to clarify that I actually think that it doesn't happen too often, or as much as it used to, with films being released straight after having a theatrical release. Most things do have a window. So if you look at like Apple films or even like Disney Plus, for example, like Napoleon and Killers of the Flower Moon didn't appear on Apple TV Plus until like 3 months later.
With minimal Apple TV Plus branding.
Exactly, which is crucial. And the same thing with Disney Plus, like, you know, most Marvel films, if a Marvel film comes out you know it's going to be on Disney Plus in 3 months' time.
Yeah.
But that is a long enough gap to be like, I don't want to be behind, and but I should go and catch it.
It usually just sort of like edges out the Blu-ray digital streaming release by a couple of weeks. That's what they do. They sort of, oh, look, go get it on Disney Plus. Yes. It'll be out to buy a la carte later.
Now, I have noticed a couple of things times recently where like on Amazon, American Fiction is now available and it has been for a few weeks. So I was like, oh, that's very soon after its theatrical run.
Yeah.
But first of all, that's a smaller film, so it kind of needs all the support it can get. But also, they didn't tell the consumer, they didn't tell us as consumers that that was coming onto streaming platforms immediately afterwards. Its theatrical run had ended, so that's not a problem. I think my issue is more that when you're being advertised, Netflix will release a film, put it into theatres where it should be seen, and then it's also say, but you know, in 2 weeks you can watch this on our platform anyway.
A Netflix film.
Yeah, a Netflix film, you can see it. So that's my issue. I think the model that the Apples and the Paramounts and the Disney have of leaving that theatrical gap is crucial, and not telling the consumer that this is going
to
be on a streaming platform soon.
Don't need to see it, it'll be in 2 weeks. Yeah,
it's like you create, sorry, we have talked about this before, but if you don't tell the consumer, the best thing is that you then create
urgency.
A demand, because, oh, there's this nice commodity. So when it appears suddenly on the streaming platform, you're like, oh, great.
Yeah.
That film I couldn't get a chance to see.
I love my Netflix subscription, my Apple subscription. It's got all those great films from recently for free. I don't have to pay for them. Whereas if you're training the consumer to not have to go to the cinema in the first place, to be part of the conversation, to be part of whatever you want to call the excitement of seeing a film, but they're never going to go.
But I do agree, there is kind of like a lazy secondhand that's happening with people where, like, I know people have said, oh, I missed the Zone of Interest in cinemas. Can I go, is that on streaming anywhere? And I'm like, well not yet.
Yeah, you've got to wait 3 months. And then you're not, if you care about seeing it when everyone's seeing it, you can't
get it. And they go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting landscape. I still think this is ebbing and flowing. I think post-COVID, people are still trying to realise what's making money at the cinema. Is it all just going to be big budget and small boutique? Like Mother's Instinct, for example, is a film that I'm almost surprised is out in the way it is. Mm. Not because of the quality of it, but just more, it's not the kind of film you see, and it's surprisingly good. But
as ever, always great to see it at any film, to see it in the cinema first.
Yeah.
It is the best experience. This next email is from Jake on LA Movies. He says, howdy gents, new listener to the show here. I've been really enjoying deep diving into the archives. Mm. Question for you, what's your review of PTA's, Paul Thomas Anderson's, Licorice Pizza? Mm. I assume you would have seen it in the early days of the pod, but couldn't find it in any conversation of the film. It's one of my favorites in the last few years. We did review that.
Yeah, we did. We had terrible SEO in the first few months of our podcast. I enjoyed it.
I want to say that we reviewed that in early 2022, one of our, like, it would have been like episode 12 or episode 30. I think we did it in a big roundup and we talked about all the films we'd seen over the Christmas break, including, I think it's the episode that has The Matrix, Spider-Man.
No, there's no way.
And a bagel on the front.
No, there's no way.
I genuinely, because
you think it's that episode?
It was January 22. I think we caught up with it. I don't think we did. Our structure, you know, was different then.
Yeah.
We were very much discovering how to do this show. So it wasn't like we do now where we go, right, here's the time to talk about the film.
Yeah.
But we did definitely review it.
It's there.
I think, do you know what? I've kind of forgotten all about that film. I'm very hit and miss the Paul Thomas Anderson. I think when he's great, he's great. Yeah. I love There Will Be Blood. I love Phantom Thread. I haven't seen The Master. I'm less hot on Boogie Nights. I think Magnolia is pretty good. I need to see Hard Eight.
I liked Licorice Pizza. I thought it was charming.
Yeah.
The great, great soundtrack. I thought very charming performance from
Cooper Hoffman.
Yeah, it was really sweet. And Alana Haim. Very good in there. Kind of weird age gap, but you know.
Yeah.
Suspend your disbelief for a cute film.
I think I could. I just left me a bit cold. It's been like how Inherent Vice is another one of his that I'm just like, okay. Just
I need to see Inherent Vice.
Lots of famous
people.
I feel
like it came and went. And
you don't say that. It's 10 years ago as well.
Yeah.
Additionally, I'm curious to hear your opinion on Los Angeles as a setting. I live an hour south of LA, so I feel connected to the symbols and lifestyle of its films. But I often wonder if people outside of California and the US get sick of seeing so many stories set in the same place. Should they make more or less LA films? Do you have any favorite LA films? Well, I don't know about more or less. I mean, whatever. First of all, this is a discussion that came up when we spoke to LA-based film podcast, Raiders of the Lost podcast, earlier this year. Our conversation with James from that podcast in January. We literally talked about LA set movies.
Yeah.
And we also, because I read out in that episode a message that we got from Priya, who's one of our listeners, who lives in LA. I was talking about all the different elements that remind her of places. And speaking of LA, another very LA movie was Michael Bay's Ambulance, or as I like to call it, Ambulance, because it's got LA highlighted in it because it's all about LA.
Ambulance.
Which I watched over the weekend and I'm going to talk about in the bonus.
Yeah.
So that's an LA movie. But James, just again, to recap this conversation, do you have any favorite LA films? What do you think of when you think of LA?
A recent striking example that I saw was Mulholland Drive. That's a really sort of sticky and fumey version of LA, very dewy and striking. All of the different scenes, which are disparately separate but somehow linked, really burn themselves into your mind.
I would say LA Confidential.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of that, a bit like Mulholland Drive, but it's like, you know, retro LA with the big palm trees and the kind of the sweat and the kind of tension. Rogue One, but not Rogue One, but this is a Rogue One.
Rogue One, great LA movie. That's definitely what I thought you were saying.
LA 92, which is this documentary about the LA riots, which is basically told, I think, entirely through news footage and found footage. It's really quite tense and gripping and uncomfortable. That's quite interesting.
Nightcrawler, seedy press, Nightcrawler, underground.
Drive,
the media sort of frenzy of that city. And
Is Terminator 2 set? Is that Sacramento? I don't know if that's is that LA?
It was LA.
Because of the aqueduct, you know, the early drive. Is that LA? I don't think it is LA. I think it's like somewhere else.
I've got no idea. Oh, that's down on Mulholland.
That's there. You're over the 105. The do you live in Silver Lake?
Have you seen the Kristen Wiig sketch about Stork? No, like down on Mulholland. No. They're like playing LA people. It's really funny. They're like making fun of like how people talk about, I just went down on Mulholland to go down on the thing. No, you gotta take the 105 over to
town. Do you know what? The thing that taught me a lot about LA or showed me a lot of LA was comedians and cars getting coffee.
Yeah.
Because they would drive through.
God, that's really true how much distinction
general
that is
LA.
Yeah.
And housing LA and all that kind of stuff.
Curvy Enthusiasm's got a really good sense of place in Los Angeles. Like it's because he's playing this billionaire in his 60s and 70s who has nothing to do but just piss people off and play golf.
Yeah.
But it's a really sort of unique window into that sort of like boomer lifestyle and how you engage with that and the middle class mansion dramas between people. I always thought that's actually quite distinctive in my framing of Los Angeles.
Do you know the song It Never Rains in Southern California from the 70s?
I don't know.
No, okay, this is a massive tangent, but I bring it up because A, good tune. Secondly, I listened to that song the other day, and if you know it, it's relatively famous. I was like, oh, this song isn't actually about rain. It's actually about a musician who moves to California to make it big, but gets no work. And that's why he says it never rains in Southern California. It never rains basically means that there's no success. No opportunities are coming.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this isn't actually about the weather.
Yeah. This next one is from Ben, who writes in, hi, James and George. I've been listening to your show for a few months now, and it's easily become my favorite podcast, even surpassing Kermode and Mayo's Take.
Oh, get in. Suck it, Kermode.
I'm not just impressed with how you deliver your takes and films, delivering them with a great dose of humour in the form of your impressions, but the level of detail you can both go into is very impressive. Thank you, you're very kind. As someone who has loved watching films for as long as I can remember, but is a novice to the art of film analysis, what would you recommend I do to build this skill other than watching films, of course? Are there any books, university lecture series on YouTube, etc., that you can recommend for anyone just starting out? My reason for asking is because my friend and I have just started a film podcast of our own, and I know there's so much room for improvement. It only makes sense to consult my favorite experts. Keep up the superlative work, Ben.
Interesting.
I would say it's
what is the secret sauce? What makes us the way we are?
I would say it. The most boring answer is that 10,000 hours of just I am better than I was when I started because I'm forcing myself to talk about two films a week in front of an audience, in inverted commas.
Yes.
But only that pure attrition of forcing myself to do it probably improves. Like the same with writing. If you're a terrible writer and you never write,
you sharpen your thoughts.
If you force yourself to write 500 words about a film every single week, you'll definitely get better.
I also think having a degree, a wider understanding, just reading around is good. And you mentioned about about reading about filmmaking? Is that
books, university lecture series on YouTube, etc.
Books. Read John York's Into the Woods, which is all about storytelling, which is really interesting. It's not even specifically about scripting; it's just about storytelling, which is just really interesting and insightful. And then, if you want to read about, I think just the kind of the way the industry has changed, either read Easy Riders Raging Bulls by Peter Biskind or read Blockbuster by Tom Schoen, which is like a riposte to that one.
A few weeks ago, George also got asked about what he learned at a film degree. I don't know episode that was in, but you spoke for like 10 to 15 minutes on the best parts of film degree and what you learned. Do you remember this?
I do remember it now. I don't know so many of these that if they you really just kind of fly by.
Keep listening, you'll find George's response to what he gained from that and how it sort of informs his analysis of film now. But I think, like, in terms of... Sorry, were you finished with your recommendations?
No, I'm
Having an interest is good because you'll naturally find other people talking very passionate about things that you're into. So I'm always fed great bits from, like, analysis reviews, people on YouTube talk about things I'm interested in. But think about being... If it's podcasting and like becoming a good communicator, I would say that you and I already were confident communicating to other people, and hence why like you take on this very extroverted, slightly narcissistic practice of going to do a podcast. But genuinely practice it, force yourself to speak in front of other people or start your own thing and force yourself to do it and get better.
I would also say that if you're trying to, if the question is about how to really like dig down on what your opinion, what you think about a movie, I always just think like before thinking, oh, what it could be saying this, could be saying that, like nuts and bolts. How do you feel? How do you feel about the movie?
Your
opinion, whether it's a sentence long, whether it's a sentence that you say to your friend as you're coming out of the cinema, or a 5 to 10 minute review you're doing on a podcast, is the same opinion.
Come attuned to how you
react.
But it's
just deeper and more fleshed out. Yeah. So it's like just because it's very easy to get lost in talking about film in the way you think you should be talking or in a way that other people are talking, but it's like ultimately how do you feel about it, and how do you expand and qualify and substantiate that opinion.
And also you can if you're struggling to figure out how you feel about a film, you can just start describing it, like kind of if you were breaking down a poem without how does the structure look and where's the punctuation and what does it say related to the word, and then you get more of a sense of, oh, it's trying to do that. Other than that, just do it.
Next up is an email from Reese, who says, first time emailer here, but I've watched your podcast for a while now and really enjoy your content.
Thanks,
hope you're
Reese.
Both well. I was wondering if you could have one person play you in a biopic of your life, who would it be and who would be the director?
Ooh.
For me, it would be Conor McGregor after his wonderful performance in Roadhouse.
He's surprisingly good in Roadhouse.
And it would be directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, that would be chaotic.
Yeah.
I don't think McGregor and Tarantino should exist in the same space. It's too much energy. Yeah.
Furthermore, would you ever consider doing a pub quiz up north? Here's my many more film reviews. Thanks, Reese.
Unlikely up north.
Wait, one day. One day
I'd love to, but currently we're
We do respect that not only do we have listeners around the world, but also not in London, out in the rest of the UK.
We are also in London. I know a lot of our listeners are in London, and if other people were to come to a place, it's technically easier for them to come to London than it is for other
Basically,
places.
If you continue to support this podcast, which is what we need everyone to do,
we
will hopefully get to a point, you know, whenever, where we'll be on, where someone will pay for us to be on a tour, and you'll see tube posters, and they'll say,
a big tour
O2
bus.
Arena, we're going to Manchester, Leeds, Scunthorpe.
I'd like, if Robert Eggers was to direct my biopic, I'd have Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe play me at different stages of my life. And I want to know what would happen to me to get me from Pattinson to Willem Dafoe.
I think it depends on whether you want to film life as a tragedy or as a comedy. So if you wanted to film my life as a tragedy, I'd get the Safdie brothers. I would get some, forlorn man. Could I do some sort of... Pattinson's quite a good example to play me.
Your
in
life just continues to spiral.
Aronofsky.
Into
Aronofsky just like...
You just completely derail.
If life is meant to be beautiful and a comedy, then, you know, Linklater, obviously.
If my life has a perfect three-act structure... it sort of all sort of ties a bow at the end, I'll get Spielberg to do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? When there's a clear well, this was where he is and this is where he went and that's where it ended.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have Spielberg sort of
bring it home. Actually, you can't go wrong with Spielberg for that kind of feel good.
And then I'd get Sam Neill to play.
I could see you as an older Sam Neill.
Yeah.
Oh, he's very cool.
I could rock a cowboy hat.
Who do you think could play me when I'm older? Or just someone in my life? You know, so who play me at
some point
in my life?
I think.
Here we go.
I do have thoughts
on it. Did you say Peter Capaldi again?
I did say Peter Capaldi, but you got
ridiculous.
Very upset.
The most ridiculous thing so, ever said.
A couple of people did comment and be like, I see it.
Change your eyes.
Get to do you?
Maybe like a deep character actor like John Hawkes.
Oh, Peter Serafinowicz looks like me. I've said that before.
Oh, yes.
He could do a comedy version of my life.
Mm.
Yeah, let us know.
Steve Carell. That looks nothing like me, but yeah, could play me. There you go. Some options.
This last one is from Sam, who says, "Hey, James and George, I'm a huge fan of the original Roadhouse, and I really don't think it is fair to call this..."
I thought you were about to go, "I'm a big fan of the original Pulp Kitchen," before you changed everything.
No, the original Roadhouse, "and I really don't think it is fair to call this a remake. For me, it's a totally different movie. The original is a classic, and I would strongly encourage you to watch it. It's only 114 minutes. The original is bright and so beautifully 80s, with some great characters, both good and bad, and a fantastic sporting role from Sam Elliott."
With the deepest voice in the world. Sam, he talks with that of his mustache.
I'm Sam Elliott.
Yeah, it's the and ice cream.
Hey, dude,
you can't really in Star Is Born. There was a deeper register, and Bradley Cooper was saying how he like trained his vocal cords to get down to that low Sam Elliott thing.
Yeah, Brad. Don't try so hard, Brad. Okay.
I know. Bless him. There are also some fantastic one-liners that you wouldn't expect from movies of this time. "I didn't hate the new film. If you want something to stick on a Thursday night and not have to think about it, then this film is absolutely perfect. And beyond that, it doesn't offer anything." I mean, to me, that just sounds like it's... I don't know, like it. "I do agree. I'm a big fan of Jake Gyllenhaal, and credit to him for the amount of training he has done for this film. Bottom line, watch the original Roadhouse. I think you will have a great time. I would say it's important to remember that when it was made, as some parts have not necessarily aged that well. Bearing this in mind, it's a fun movie that I hope would be a go-to for Sunday afternoons for a long time. Cheers, Sam." I mean, Sam, when you describe it as, "If you want something to stick on a Thursday night and not have to think about it, it's perfect. Beyond that, doesn't offer anything." That's kind of where I was at with it. It's not...
Damning with faint praise.
It's not a film that... like some other films that have been bad. It's not unpleasant to watch. I'm not irritated by having seen it, but it doesn't really offer anything interesting despite that. You're like, "Oh, it's Colin McGregor. He's still going in this scene." He's still talking. God, that's great.
He's in this movie,
he's just enough to just keep you engaged for the second half. Yeah. But I hope Doug Liman gets a better chance at it for his next film, because I think he's a competent director.
You've seen The Roadhouse. Now see
Roadhouses. Mansion.
Yeah, Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
Road Hamlet.
Yeah. Well, guys, those are the emails we got sent. Don't forget, as always, to send in your thoughts, your questions, your concerns, your reviews to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com, and we'll read them out on the show.
Should we play a game?
Let's do it.
James, as ever, Pop Kitchen ends
with a game.
With a game. James, I have three rounds of games for you today. Three rounds of games.
Three different games?
Three rounds of games.
Of a game.
The games that we're playing today are multiple. And there are three rounds, but two games.
I have no idea how many games I'm getting.
You're getting three rounds.
Yeah.
Okay. Which in a way is like three different games. But the first two are one game and the last one's a different game.
Thank you.
The first two rounds are the name three and six.
Nice.
Where I give you 6 seconds. You have to name three of the questions I've asked you. Now, full disclosure, I prepped these on the way over.
Okay.
So even some of these, I don't know all the answers to. But I'm just hoping that you can just scrabble and try.
Just do it. Okay.
And lastly, I did also spontaneously come up with a good old classic of movie opposites.
Oh, nice. Okay. Love those. Great.
Okay. So again, let's begin with name three in six.
Okay. All right.
Name three of these in 6 seconds. Name three zombie movies.
Zombieland, 28 Days Later, and
Time. Shit. Name three Jennifer Lopez movies.
Made in Manhattan, Hustlers, and...
Time. Name three movie pets.
Pets. Okay. You got Water for Elephants.
No. What's the name of the pet? You got to name the pet.
Oh, God. Bolt. Marley and Me. And How to Train Your Dragon.
What's the name of the dragon?
I don't know.
Nah, ton. Name three Jim Carrey characters.
Okay. The Cable Guy.
What's his name? Name the character, God, not the movie.
I don't remember.
This is actually really easy, this one.
Truman.
Yes.
And then you've got...
very big one. You've got
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty isn't his name. Time, you're done. Name three movie aliens.
Okay, the Xenomorph.
Yes.
E.T.
Yes.
And let's go for...
Time. Name three movie titles that reference an architectural feature.
What? This is the most you question. I got none. I have zero. Give me 3 minutes. I get okay. Zero.
Done. Right. Love it. That is Rear Window. Panic Room.
Oh, okay.
The Girl Next Door.
Oh, okay.
Things like that.
Okay. I thought you'd be like proscenium arches.
Not that bad.
I could, apart from the last one, I consistently got two.
Terrible. Yeah.
Two of all of them.
Okay. Let's just go through that. First of all, zombie movies. 28 Days Later, borderline. Yeah. I will allow it, but yeah. Technically they're not zombies because they're not undead. They've been affected by a virus. Jennifer Lopez movies, you've got Made in Manhattan, you've got Hustlers, but you could have also said Out of Sight, name another, The Wedding Planner.
Yeah.
And what Parker with Jason Statham.
Sure.
But really, you do
it. It's a real mishmash.
So movie career. Pets, I mean, even I struggled here. I've got Milo, which is the dog in the mask. What's the name of Ron's rat?
Scabbers. Oh, yeah. That's good.
And actually, could have done that. Harry Potter would have accepted.
Hedwig.
What's the name of the
Crookshanks,
Hedwig? Yeah, all of that. Yeah. Three Jim Carrey characters. I thought you would have gone for Truman, Ace Ventura, and the Grinch. Like the ones where the title is the movie
What's
character.
What's Bruce's last name in Bruce Almighty?
Oh.
Bruce Nolan?
I think it might be Bruce Nolan.
Is it Bruce Nolan? I'm Bruce Nolan. It's Bruce Nolan.
Should I look it up to see if you're right?
I think it's Bruce. Could be like a different. It's Bruce Nolan. I'm Bruce Nolan. It's like,
back to you, fuckers. Bruce Nolan, but James, Nolan. Well done. Yeah. Shame you didn't do that in the actual quiz. Okay. And then movie Aliens, you said the Xenomorph. I would have also accepted Predator if you'd said Predator.
Yeah,
E.T., well done. And then you struggled and didn't get any more, but you could have said Paul. Yes, you're right. With Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready for round two?
Let's do it.
Name three of these in 6 seconds. Name three movie westerns.
Dirty Harry, Slow West.
That's not a western, Dirty Harry.
Slow West. Slow West.
Time.
3:10 to you.
3:10 to you, more extent. Yeah. Time. Straight away, not a western. Name three movies directed by Kathryn Bigelow.
You've got Detroit.
Yes.
You've got The Hurt Locker.
Yes.
And you've got...
Time. Name three vampire movies.
Twilight, Nosferatu, and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Very good. Name three Russell Crowe movies.
Gladiator, A Good Year, and I'm going to go for the priest.
the Pope's exorcist. Yeah. Name three movie spaceships. The name of the spaceship.
Millennium Falcon.
Yes.
The SS Nostromo.
Yes.
And I'm going to go for the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah. Well done. And lastly, name three football/soccer movies.
Goal.
Yes.
The Longest Yard.
That's American football.
Original is with...
soccer? No. The original? No, the original is American football.
Oh.
You get one more. There's one big famous one, British one, you haven't said. Time. Okay, let's go through those for you, James. So, first of all, name three westerns. Dirty Harry is set in 1970s LA, I think. So, you said Slow West, because Unforgiven, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, for a few dollars more, Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
Three movies directed by Kathryn Bigelow. You did Detroit, you did Hurt Locker, but you didn't say Point Break.
Yeah. Could
have done that. Zero Dark Thirty. Vampire movies. You got that. You got Twilight. You got Bram Stoker's Dracula, and you had Nosferatu. Russell Crowe movies. Just about the Pope's Pappardelle, and you had Gladiator and A Good Year. Movie spaceships. Well done. You did all
Could
three
have
of those.
Said Tom Cruise's The Mummy. He's in that.
Yes, absolutely. And then for football soccer movies, you've got Goal. Though Your Longest Yard is definitely
Goal.
American football.
Have you seen Goal?
No.
Oh, Goal's great.
Goal.
Yeah.
As it was written. Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh, I love Ben.
And then you could have gone for Next Goal Wins, which I know we haven't seen, but it's a recent example.
Yeah. There must be more football
soccer
films.
Movies.
I feel like there should be more.
She's the Man. That's a soccer movie.
Yes. That's a soccer with an S.
That's a soccer.
Yeah.
You're the soccer moms. Are you ready for movie opposites now?
Yes. Let's
well
do
done.
It.
You okay. kind of got a bit better. Now we've warmed up your brain.
Brain
I'm going to give you just all of it in one round.
Do
just going to lay it on you. Some of these, I don't think we've done any of these before.
I've definitely done these.
But if it's been used again, doesn't matter. Play the hits.
Mm-hmm.
Some new films, some old. James, are you ready? Guess the movie from its opposite film title. Listen to you.
Hear to me. Listen. Speak to me.
Talk to me. Fence Road.
Gate Street. Gate.
Wall Street.
Wall Street.
Thud.
thud. Lift.
Splash.
Up, splash. Oh.
Sacrificing public Rita.
Say again?
Sacrificing public Rita.
Private. What?
Sacrificing public Rita.
Saving Private Ryan. Yes.
Do listen down.
Don't look up.
Yes. First of the Mohawks.
Last of the Mohicans. Yes. Very good.
Fall of the Star of the Fish.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. None of us friends.
All of us strangers.
Yes. The Activator.
The deactivated, the canceller.
If you cancel something, your contract has been
terminated. The Terminator, very good.
The Found Girls.
The Lost Boys.
Yes. Whimper.
Joy.
Scream. Your Month with Martin.
My Week with Marilyn.
Yes. Father of Paul.
A Son of Saul.
Wheat Street.
Wheat. That must be Wheat.
Rye Lane. Tops.
Bottoms.
June, January.
May, December.
There you go.
Very good. There's such little fun little ticklers.
Wheat Street. I thought you'd quite like.
Wheat Street is very good.
There we go. Thus concludes the games.
Oh, very good.
Today.
Very good.
Thank you for joining us for episode 122. of Pulp Kitchen. We will be putting out a bonus this week. It's going to be more of a kind of casual, informal one. If you want to hear me bring James up to speed on the Michael Bay masterpiece that is Ambulance, that is on Netflix right now. I'll also be talking about another movie, forgotten gem, called Copland from the late 90s with De Niro, Keitel, nice. Ray Liotta, Sylvester Stallone. If you want to check that out, that's a nice little Friday chat we'll be putting out on the bonus. Other than that,
don't forget, we post new episodes of Pulp Kitchen every single Wednesday. Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it. You've made it to this part of the episode. You're our biggest fans.
I see you guys commenting and sharing and posting all of our videos, and I really appreciate it. It really does help. Please continue to do that on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube Shorts. We're posting things that aren't often on this channel, like you're going to see
non-podcast film content,
film bites, press junkets. Stay tuned for all that. We really appreciate it. And any reviews and ratings you can do for us, like on Spotify. If you're listening to us on Spotify right now and you haven't done so already, go up to the five-star rating thing. Give us 5 stars. We really appreciate that.
Loads of you have done that, by the way, and there are loads of podcasts that are technically bigger than us that have fewer ratings.
Oh yeah.
So you guys have been activated. I like that.
Thank you very
engaged.
Much. We'll be back next week. We will be reviewing Alex Garland's Civil War and Netflix's film Scoop.
Series. Is it a film?
It's a film.
It's a film.
I take it all back.
Nice. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.